that was actually, I felt like that was actually in time. Like, it was like, whoosh, all at the exact same time.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Oh,
the
yeah.
The stars aligned for that one, boys. Mm-hmm. Mercury's in, we've just made Mercury in retrograde as a result of that sync, you know? We just retrograded that
Mercury was like on its way this way, and then it went, uh-oh, perfect sync.
Venus is in red orbit. Is in the red phase of its orbit, and it will be making its celestial crossing.
Everyone, watch your stocks. Things are about to get wacky.
No, I don't. But Venus is not Mars or whatever you said. I forget the first
place. Mercury.
I said Mercury. It was in retrograde because it's always in retrograde.
It is, depending on the angle you're looking at it from.
Wow, Bob. You know a lot about astrology.
Mm-hmm. Hey, you're the one who's telling me all about the red moons of Venus.
No, I'm making
Venus.
Stuff up. I don't know. Okay. I don't know what I'm saying. Yeah. I'm making.
You could have fooled
me. I'm saying nothing, Bob.
You could have fooled me.
I know my calculus because you plus me equals us.
Aww.
Oh, Brent.
You know what's what is funny is that there are people, and we got to do an astrology episode. There are people who buy and sell stocks based on astrological readings. So
how do they, well, I guess we'll talk about that in the stock episode.
Yeah, we'll wait.
Venus plays an important aspect of today's topic, and I hope that you are ready for a more speculative one. Actually, because it does sound a little, it sounds like we're talking about the origin of sci-fi today, by the way.
Heck yes, brother.
And it's interesting because you would think it would just be like, let's go down the list of it, but there's actually only a few like major developments in sci-fi. But I just mainly wanted to talk about some specifics. Not specific. Well, yes, some specifics, and then talk about like the developments. We'll get there when we get there. You'll see what I mean.
Well, I guess the first thing we should do is probably introduce ourselves.
Yes, we should. We definitely.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
My name is. So if you haven't been listening to this episode, this podcast for a while now, we are your B, and your J, and I am your Beanty B, Bobby. I don't know what Beanty is, but it is a sci-fi novel.
Okay. All right. I am your Bene Gesserit B, Brent, because I got Dune on the brain all the time.
I knew you were going to do a Dune one. I knew you were going to do a Dune one.
I got Dune on the brain.
Dude, yeah. Dune won a bunch of Oscars.
Good for them. That was nice to see.
Brent's always tuning into the Dune.
Tuning into the Dune. I'm working my way through Children of Dune right now, so we're full in.
I'm halfway through Children of Dune.
Messiah?
Children of Dune as well, because Children of Dune is the third one, right?
Yep.
Messiah's wicked short though, so it makes sense.
Yeah, it is.
But,
whereas I'm reading Fat Chance, Beating the Odds Against Sugar and Processed Food.
Shut up, nerd. Read Dune.
Don't read any practical knowledge. Don't read those stupid practical knowledge books that give you real learnings.
Gross.
No, but I haven't even introduced myself. I am your interplanetary journey, Jay. Jack. I am your interplanetary journey, JJ. Because today we're talking about the origin of sci-fi. Where does it start? I already told you guys this because over the text, but a lot of scholars. So there's two main sort of things that people point to.
Two schools of thought, if you will.
There's two schools of thought, right? There is the idea of genre needing to be purposeful, and the idea of the ideas just existing whenever. Because the first sort of I guess work of sci-fi that some people consider is called A True Story by Lucian of Samoset. I think I'm saying that Lucian of Samosa. Samosata is what it is. Samosata, not Samosat. That's whatever I said. And so this was written all the way back in the second century. I believe it's dated to like 140 something, but whatever, it doesn't matter.
Oh, I was not expecting that far back.
Yeah, this is from the second century, and it is I should point out it is satirically called A True Story. Because it's obviously not a true story, because it features a crew of sailors who get knocked up into space by a cyclone, and they end up on the moon, where they meet a bunch of different fantastical alien species that have various. And the descriptions of these alien species is more akin to fantasy, you know, if we're being fair, is not really sci-fi, but the ideas of going into space in general, obviously is very sci-fi.
Exactly. However, and this podcast is, if anything,
they go to the moon, and they participate in a galactic war. I guess it's not galactic, but I don't know what the word is for just
celestial war.
Yeah I don't know what it is for just our solar system. A celestial one or something. Yeah. or the solar war, but between the moon and the sun. And so obviously this would never happen, because you can't live on the sun, so there wouldn't be people who live on the sun. But they're fighting over the colonization rights to Venus, which is like such a mundane aspect. And in it,
did people know about planets at this time in history?
Well, no, actually, they did, because they were there. I mean they knew about like celestial bodies,
right?
But and I guess they did know that they were like I guess this is where it gets into the sci-fi, because I probably should have started with this, but a lot of people like to the definition that a lot of people like to use is that sci-fi is that sci-fi specifically engages with new ideas and hinges on technological advancement, usually. So
like, I did just for the brain bogglers out there, I did a little Google search. And so the first planet was Uranus, whatever it's called. It's discovered in 1781. So obviously, I imagine, you know, if you look at like Roman gods, like Neptune and Venus, and like those were probably pointed at in the sky as like, oh, that's a celestial body up there. But you wouldn't know what it was exactly. You just knew there was something out there, maybe. I don't know. Trying to like make sense of it.
So it's funny that I don't know why I didn't think to look that up. Like, what did they think that planets were at that time? But
it's really interesting to think that early on there were writings about this.
Yeah, and they sort of like it's interesting. So what is, so why did he write this, right? Was he just, was he, they was he, did he just want to, you know, speculate? And as fun as that would be, the answer is no. So this is actually a satirical work of a very popular sort of type of media at the time called travelogues. And so in the time of the Roman Empire, people were like, man, we're doing that whole you know, that whole Enlightenment, because the Enlightenment was a technical period, but they were doing that whole you know, higher thinking. We're Romans, we invent stuff.
You see a bunch of dudes in robes standing like this.
Yeah.
Theater.
You get
and
jealous.
They're like, and they're like, so, you know, people like to be learned. So let's go and travel the world. And then we're going to write about the world, because the world is so massive that it's going to be impossible for us to ever like chart it all out. So
sounds like a little bit of a beatnik kind of situation, a little bit of a Jack Kerouac kind of thing, if you will, on the road.
Well, yeah, I mean,
BC style.
You got to understand though that like the only people who could afford to travel were like these like, you know, higher class scholars and stuff. Mm. But they would write down what they found in order to sell more of your travelogues. People would embellish often in them a little bit. And spice them up to get a little bit of, you know, a little bit of extra sales going, and
zhuzh it up a bit,
zhuzh it up,
a little bit of Roman Empire yellow journalism, if you will. Lucian of Samosata had enough and was like, look, that's why the story is satirically titled A True Story, because he was like, this is essentially what people are doing. And he wrote it to be like, this is completely absurd. But in doing so, he has, you know, he inadvertently talked about, you know, colonization of other planets in an intergalactic war.
So it's kind of like him accidentally theorizing the solar system.
Yeah, a little bit. There's a lot of like fantasy sort of like, okay, well, I don't even know how they would do that.
Yeah.
Because like the way that they go, they have these like giant space spiders that weave bridges between planets, and that's how they, like in the book, that's how they get between. And it's like, okay, well, that wouldn't even do anything. But then they have concepts like liquid air. They have
interesting.
They have concepts of like artificial atmospheres created for places where they can't breathe. The colonization of planets and aliens, like I already said. But a very interesting one that I think is actually, that I think is an interesting little tidbit, and I don't know why I am so interested about this one specific topic, but in the they have a pit, essentially. Everywhere that you read it, they call it a pit or like a hole, but I assume it's supposed to be like an amphitheater type thing, because that makes sense. But what it is it's an amphitheater type thing covered by a big glass dome, and if you sit in the bottom of that, you can hear and see everything that goes on Earth. Like they had this like this magical, not sort of surveillance kind of system, which is really interesting, because I feel like if we ever got to the point where we were colonizing the moon, we definitely would be able to. I mean, we could do it now. Have the surveillance state of the whole planet. Eventually they like After they do a bunch of random stuff in space, and they come down and they get swallowed by like a 200 long whale, and they essentially do the whole thing over again, except they find like two warring species of like fish people inside the whale that are fighting over stuff.
Some Murlocs?
Yeah,
Murlocs.
Basically. Well, in the like note breakdowns, it didn't specify, but one of them was a lobster face people. Was lobster people.
Okay, well, before you even move on, what I want to know is it like the face of the lobster on someone's face, or their whole face is a whole lobster?
I think it's the face of the lobster is the face.
I'm picturing is like a dude just took like, you know, like one of the plastic lobsters from Red Lobster and just like taped it to their face. It's like, no, I'm Lobster Man.
No, he looked like a shout out. If we throw back to my old Magic the Gathering references, he looked like a Homerid. I bet that's what.
Oh, there you go.
I was imagining a Homerid.
Nice.
I'm gonna have to look this up.
That's probably more accurate.
It's just like a lobster, just like a lobster that stands upright. That's basically a Homerid.
Yeah.
He looks like he's like Larry the Lobster, kind of
living like Larry.
Yeah, basically, dude. But this book came out, and Lucian was like, "Yeah, dude, this is a true story, man." obviously not. But so where do we go from here? Well, I mean, this book, this is why I'm sort of wishy-washy and calling this while this might be the earliest surviving, example of sci-fi, I don't really think it's the origin of. It's not really the true origin of the genre, because it doesn't really influence anything. It doesn't really set any sort of rules or anything for the genre, which I think
it's kind of detached.
Yeah, I think it's much more. I think that's much more important than just like being the first dude to come up with this with some of these ideas. But there are so where does it go from here, basically? There are certain random little like spatterings of science fiction topics throughout the days. People like to bring up in ancient Hindu text. I'm not sure if it's the Vedas or not, but in one of the ancient Hindu texts, there is a famous story of a flying saucer abducting people and bringing them around space. There's a few things in the Bible where, depending on how you interpret them, you know, could be
the chariots of fire.
Yeah, and the I think there's various flying, floating whatevers in the Bible that they talk about. And then there's obviously the whole ancient aliens thing, where it's like, oh, a lot of this stuff is actually talking about, but that wouldn't be sci-fi, because that would be sci fact. But it's not until we get to the mid to late 19th century where we start seeing things like Mary Shelley. With Frankenstein and the reanimation of the dead, which we delve into it, where we start seeing, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, Jules Verne, if I'm not mistaken.
I think you got it. I'll double check.
And then the big one that people like to point to is H.G. Wells' The Time Machine, which a lot of people point to as like, boom, this is we are hard and fast in the sci-fi genre. And then as the early 20s, things really started to pick up as the world was industrializing for World War One. And so this is the main topic that I wanted to discuss, the thing that I find so interesting about sci-fi is that it really, like, the nature of the human mind and it's expounding on what it already knows. Mm. And so what I mean by that is, like, if I were to say, you know, Bobby, think of imagine a spaceship, right?
Mm.
Your spaceship is going to have, you know, light speed thrusters and a nav computer and laser, you know, cannons and a force field generator. Mm. But if you were to, you know, if you were to go back to Lucien of Samosata and ask him to imagine a spaceship, he doesn't have guns. So mm-hmm. can he imagine lasers? He doesn't know about electricity at all, obviously.
Does he have a car? Like, they don't have cars, so
yeah. Is the idea of that sci-fi changes as human technology changes, or sci-fi came into being
mm-hmm.
because of technological advancement, I feel like humans mm-hmm. were able to sort of could wonder what, you know.
Well, and I wonder if that influenced invention. I mean, if you look at Star Trek and some of the things we create today, like cell phones and FaceTime, was that influenced by sci-fi?
Yeah, I was. You know? I was gonna bring up. I was gonna bring up the Star Trek one. Yeah, that's really interesting. That there's a lot of things that were in Star Trek that used to be science fiction that are now. That we just have.
And were they inevitable? Were they inevitable? And it's just science fiction was the first place for it to sort of come into fruition because it doesn't need to actually be made. It doesn't have to be discovered technologically. Or is it actually thanks to Star Trek that we even had the idea in the first place? I think it's an interesting thing to think about.
Yeah, it's kind of chicken in the eggy, a bit Ouroboros.
Yeah, a little bit.
But like something that I love to look at are those pictures from drawings and stuff from like 1815, and it's like mm-hmm. this is what they thought 2015 was gonna look like.
Yeah,
and there's like boats with wings and stuff, and it's so funny because it's like, oh well, of course, right? Like, of course they're gonna think it's gonna be like a boat with wings because that's their that's what they know as the big mm-hmm. the big travel thing. And like what I mean by like, if you were to imagine a nav computer, we're talking, it's a computer that only, you know, is just like just used for navigation, mm-hmm. Right? Because it's like, I wonder if they would even think, like, how long until it took someone to think like, oh, you know, like looking at a map in the stars and to find out where we are. What if like there was something that magically did that for us?
Mm.
You know, like ideas like that.
So this one's interesting because it's like it's basically a picture of like a classroom, and there's a bunch of students with like these like headsets on where they're like what appears to be they're being fed books by the teacher. But what's funny about this is the technology is so primitive because it's just a crank and a bunch of books going into a big like machine.
Like it's like a meat grinder. Like they're literally like grinding up the information. Like information is.
Well, they didn't have computers, so they didn't know that, you know.
Yeah, it's like the information is like the paper itself and not the words on the paper. Right. So it's like, if you just grind this paper up and like electrocute it into their skulls, they learned.
Like they didn't they have
books.
Yeah, which is so, because if we were to say, because today we'd be like, oh yeah, you just, which is so, it's so funny that we right now, right, are making fun of that because.
Even though we're doing the same thing.
Because we do the same exact thing with information today, except we're just like, oh, we're smarter because now we know that we can digitize it. It's like, yeah, but you still can't inject those gigabytes into your brain.
Yeah. I like this one. This one's interesting. It's a whale bus, and it's like a bunch of people sitting on a thing being carried by a whale. And to your point earlier, Jack, it's like, At the time, we didn't have cars. We just rode on horses. So you would think naturally, oh, in the future, we'll ride on other animals. It's like
if you want
no submarines.
If you want a submarine, you're going to have, you know, horses can't swim. So it'll have to be, I don't know, whale-drawn carriage.
that's so true. What do we do now that will not, like, I kind of think... like holographic images, you know, when you look at like movies like Iron Man, where it's like, and it's like, will we need that?
Those, I think that kind of stuff is going to be looked at. I think there are aspects that we like that sci-fi has like pinned as things that are going to happen that I just think are not going like that holographic interface stuff. Mm-hmm. I would never want a light based interface over something tactile ever.
Yes, agreed. And I think because so many people agree with that, there will never be, like, a couple of times they tried to do the keyboards, remember? The light keyboards where it would shine like a laser and you'd type on the laser and it was like, this is the future. It's like, yet we're all buying Razors because they have that click, you know?
Yeah, I can't even imagine why that would even be, like, why is it so prevalent? Because it's like, who would want that? And also, why would that ever, even if people do want it, why is it ever going to be more practical than just like a regular thing? I don't know. Like, I'm just like, I don't know, maybe to say if space, I don't know. It's just, it's one of those things where it's like,
Well, okay. The other day I was using that drawing app that comes with the VR, the Oculus, and you can go up. You can go down, you can go side to side, and you can go left to right, you can do every direction. And it's like, this is overwhelming. Like, I would rather draw on a piece of paper because at least I know the rules. Like, I sound like a Luddite, you know, but it's almost like too, it's like, this seems cool, but when you're actually trying to practically use it to draw things and draw art, no one's gonna look at this practically. No one's gonna use this practically. It kind of reminds me of NFTs, actually, a little bit, you know. That's a whole other story.
Yeah. Well, that's funny. NFTs are like it's interesting because if you were to, I feel like if you were to write NFTs in like a sci-fi world, you would flip them around, right? Mm-hmm. And you would have it so that in my mind, I see a writer writing the NFTs first and then the cryptocurrencies later, because it seems to me, I don't know, maybe this is just like a weird like prejudice I have towards NFTs, but they seem like a step backwards from cryptocurrency.
No, it is. I mean, it is. If you watch the documentary, The Line Goes Up on YouTube, it's very interesting because they basically talk about that, like the fact that NFTs were created as a sort of backtrack to add some sort of value to cryptocurrency.
Yeah, because it's interesting because if you think about it, it's like it kind of goes counter. It's kind of counterintuitive to what like the technology that crypto is based on a little bit, because it's like it's sort of funny how currency is in the way where it's like, okay, well, they all need to be exactly the same as each other, but they also need to be individually identifiable at the same time. And so it's like, I feel like in a sci-fi world, right, I feel like some NFTs happen and then some mega conglomeration corp comes by and is like, so now we're gonna do, I think I've talked about this before, we're gonna take this NFT technology and make our own currencies. Like back in the days of Xbox, you know, when you had to get Microsoft points on the Xbox store in order to, because it would dissociate your brain from you actually spending real money on products. And then
when you buy yourself a new skin for your Master Chief.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. You know, it's like you really want.
I needed that Hello Kitty Master Chief skin, my guy. Like, how am I supposed to teabag noobs unless I have Hello Kitty on the side of my Master Chief helmet?
Yeah. I said, like, the reason why I don't want NFTs to get popular is because, like, I'm afraid of what happens if Google is like, okay, we only accept, you know, Google bucks, and Amazon is like, we need Amazon dollars.
Yeah, I think NFTs are stupid. Hot take, but sorry, Alex.
Wow, Bobby. Wow. Okay.
I think the idea behind NFTs, I've said this before. I said this in the NFT episode, and I said it before, I'll say it again. The concept and the fact that an NFT allows a digital artist to legitimize their work as a physical artist would, in the sense of a physical artist can have the painting, right? We always talk about that. Whereas digital artist, it's like, oh, well, it's just digital art. I can just, you know, alt C alt V. Like, where, like, what good is that? And it's like, well, someone still had to create it, right? And so I like that idea. I like that there was the digital artist Beeple who was able to sell his artwork for millions of dollars as a traditional artist because of this technology, even though he had posted it for free before. You know, that kind of stuff is cool, but like,
yeah, the credit thing is great. I like that it gives people credit.
Yeah, but like, the commoditization is so, like, consumerism is poison. And it's poisoned. It's poisoned. It's instantly poisoned the cryptocurrency market.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's just turned out to be just like a weird pyramid scheme, and the NFT is just part of it to just get more people. You got to have that bored ape to diversify your crypto.
Every
investment.
Time I see those Twitter profile pictures, I get so mad.
Yeah, well, dude. It's it's funny because it's like it's like a spoonful of, you know, sugar helps the medicine go down, where it's like before crypto was like just this completely, you know, fiat thing, and
well, it used to be, okay, maybe I can help you out here, Jack. It used to be a fiat thing, and now it's like capitalism has sunk its greasy little teeth into
I do remember crypto. What I was going to say, but okay, it wasn't along those lines, but I do agree.
Okay.
But it's like before, right? I used to explain crypto like it's like stocks, except with stocks you can predict the performance of the company because you know what the company does, right? And then you know, as a human being who functions in society, you can judge. You can give a reasonable estimation of whatever that company does is given value to society, right? And you can be like, you know, oh yeah, you know, like when Apple, you know, the stocks go up when a new Apple product comes out, you know, is basically what I'm saying. But with crypto, it's like, okay, now it's a complete gamble, and it's based on nothing, and there's no way to. It's just whichever way the wind blows. But with NFTs, it's like, oh, which it is still whichever way the wind blows, you can smell the flowers on the wind, and you can see the little trading card that goes with your little fake dollar.
Exactly. And then you get to see Jimmy Fallon and Paris Hilton talk about it on The Tonight Show.
Dude, it's such a
That's just fun. That's just fun.
And Matt Damon talk about it during the Super Bowl.
Just an actual, like...
We bought a crypto.
Completely... Oh, my God. It's just, like, completely, like, you see that, and then you think you're living in the simulation. It's like, somebody is reading my mind and they're thinking, what's the worst possible thing that they could see right now? And it's like, how about two multimillionaires talking about the thousands of dollars they spent on two little digital images.
Dude.
While some poor PA is like encouraging the audience to clap and in like awe,
yeah,
as they show their bored apes.
Yeah, while a PA an underpaid PA sweats while a producer is breathing into his in ear, being like, dude, you gotta press that applause sign button. You gotta press that applause sign button, dude.
I mean, it reminds me. I was watching the Celtics Kevin Garnett retirement, and they gave him an NFT as like one of his like rewards. And I'm just like, everyone's clapping, like, yeah, this is so cool. And I'm like, oh, God, this is just the worst.
Yeah, I mean, the
fact that it's, like, now bleeding into, like, regular, like, corporate stuff is like, ugh.
Here's the thing. It's interesting. I think that, write a little sci-fi about this. Writers of the world. I think culture is moving too fast for corporations at this point. I think it's moving way too fast for corporations. I think it's been speeding up for a while, and I think now it's completely past the point of that. And I think there's two reactions to that from the corporate world, right? You see the incredible over adoption of these like weird random cultural phenomenon idea things that pop up because they're like, oh, we got to get on this now. And then you see them just being related to whatever topic just way too late. Right, yeah. You see an episode of a show, and you're like, "Oh, this episode was obviously written like 3 months ago."
Yeah, it can't keep up. It can't keep up. Like even like COVID jokes, like in like Netflix shows, like they're not up to date. They're trying so hard to keep things up to date, and it's just they're struggling because the world moves fast, you know.
Yeah, it's
and
like,
with the internet, like, we all know things constantly.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that because I feel like that. I feel like they just as well got into like, okay, this is how it's going to be with COVID, and then now COVID is like is like coming to an end in America, at least basically, like in terms
of
the way we treat it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, in terms
we're acting
of
like it's gone.
Yeah, in terms of in terms of like policies and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, there was the new season of It's Always Sunny is very, very heavily focused on COVID in a lot of different ways, and like the election and Trump and stuff. And it's so funny because it's just like, guys, like this is one of the episodes about like the insurrection, and it's like this is like history at this point, guys. This is like so far back, yet really it just happened, but we're so far beyond it already because we're moving so fast.
It's interesting because it's like it's so funny to see how like I wonder what'll happen once the sort of new generation takes over, because we're right on the cusp of, I feel like there is a huge generational line between people who grew up with constant access to the internet and people who grew up without a computer. Right. And it's to the point of like, I don't know, like Brent, when did you get your first computer in your house?
I'm maybe a little bit out of the ordinary for my generation. I had a computer in my house by age 8, I want to say.
Well, you were a dweeb.
But it was like a fucking Commodore 64 where I had to put the floppy disks in and do the MS-DOS prompt to launch the game.
Yeah.
Like, but I didn't have the internet in my house until I was like 14.
Yeah, you know? And it's like I was never in a scenario where a computer was separate from an internet, right?
Yeah.
And I'm sure there was at some point in my life where, because I was born in 1998, so I honestly could not tell you if my parents would have had a computer in the house when, in 1998. I want to say no, but
whereas like I'm in the middle and. You know, I feel like I have a very clear memory of having a computer growing up. I always had a computer, but I remember getting the internet. I remember we would only be able to play like PGA golf games, like Pajama Sam with like discs that we would buy. And I used Microsoft Word, you know, and I remember when the internet was the first like, a thing, and it was maybe like 2003, 2004 we got it, and I was amazed. I was like, what is this? You can like talk to other people. So that was kind of like something that
I am,
you know, it's a little bit of a ramp here.
I never learned, because like we had computer classes in school and stuff. So maybe that's why I like, I remember like second grade, first grade, they would have computer classes, and like maybe not second, I want to say it was like second or first grade, maybe it was like third grade, maybe it was middle school, starting middle school. But we used to like type on the Alpha Smarts too, or in the early days, which I don't know if you had those, but they were like these teal semi clear plastic that was very popular.
And they could
display like three lines of text, and you would use that, at my old high school, all the students are given a Chromebook, their own personal Chromebook for the time that they're at school. And then I think they return them when they're seniors, or maybe they keep them, I don't know. A Chromebook is like $50 apparently,
it's funny though. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh yeah, yeah. But we, so like, or like the laptop carts, when the laptop carts used to get wheeled around to class or whatever, and you have to do laptops, instead we would have the Alpha Smart cart.
Yeah.
And the Alpha Smarts would come out, and you would use it. They were just like a typing machine.
It was
essentially just a digital typewriter, and you would type up your thing, and it would like, it was essentially a USB drive with a keyboard, mm-hmm. and then you would hook it up to a computer, and it would print out from that, which is like so weird to think about.
What's funny is I had this conversation with our friend Ethan, and I think maybe it's because you guys went to the same school.
We did,
but he also had an Alpha Smart, and like I was like, I've never seen that before. I've never seen an Alpha Smart. I handwritten until 10th grade when we first got our first MacBooks. 10th
grade?
Yeah, we didn't have like laptops.
We started doing everything official typed in 6th grade.
Wow. I didn't use Google Docs until 10th grade.
We didn't have Google Docs I got Google Docs in my, it must have been 6th grade. I think 6th grade was the first. I remember when school shit, because the school system used to use I have no idea what it was because I've never used Apple, and it was the only time I'd ever used Apple, but all of the computers at school were Apple, and there was a database that you would everyone would connect to, and everyone would have their whatever on it, and you could like you would have to like, there was your local thing, and then you had your like, mine was like Jay Lachine.
I think I had that at the end of high school too.
You would like upload your things
like
to
your
that.
Documents and your projects.
You'd be like, make sure if you want your thing printed out, if you want it submitted, whatever, make sure it's in here. And so I just remember it being very funny to be like, because our computer teacher was like this old ass woman,
mm-hmm.
Who like obviously like took a like. Was either like an early adopter of computers or like took a class to like be an IT person for the school or whatever. And it's like, yeah, lady, we all of us like grew up with computers. We all know how to use them better than you probably.
Mm-hmm.
Which I've actually come to learn is not something that is universal with everyone, because like I know really well how to like navigate a computer, and like I don't know, I think it's maybe because of being an editor, but like
mm-hmm.
people with messy file storage systems on their computer, like you know those memes where it's like oh haha, when you download an image and you have no idea where it goes, it's like, no, I know exactly where it's like, I don't know that I know exactly where the image goes when you download it,
yeah.
I know where to find it, and I know how to not make it save as like XBC, you know, and it's like,
yeah,
it's
kind of true, because
Explorer thing, yeah, I don't know,
I mean like what you're saying though about like, you know, people knowing, like what you said to your old lady teacher who had like was teaching you how to use computers, and you're like, we already know how to use these. Like my brother and sister, even though they're only a few years younger than me, they are much better at their phones. I struggle. I mean, I'm not like bad at my phone, like I can figure it out, I can take the time to learn, but like they know how to do everything.
How good are you at your phone, dude?
Well, they're like, okay, you can like go on an iPad and like pinch it and like drop it on your iPhone. I'm like, what? How does that work? I'm like, I don't know that stuff.
Yeah.
They're like, you don't have this lens? I'm like, no.
That's funny. My mom will a lot of times be like, is there any way to do this? And I'm like, oh yeah, mom, you just go on your phone or go on your computer and do it. like she doesn't think. The problem solving processing is different, it's because I think they were like trained to problem solve with different tools.
Yeah, it was like molded through the like, my grandmother is really good at figuring out how to do things when it comes to baking. She's really good at doing things with baking because she took like 5 years of home economics. Like she knows so much about what, when to whisk the egg and blah, 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 blah. But she can't figure out how to rotate an image on her phone. And it's like, yeah, I think you're right. I think there's just like this problem solving that is applied. It's not general universal problem solving. It's specific problem solving with a certain subject.
Yeah,
of things.
It's like they don't even know that.
They don't even know what they're talking about.
Yeah, they don't even know what they're talking about. No, like it's like some people don't even realize that the possibility is there.
Like the problem solving that you have for baking can be applied to phones. You just need to open your mind.
Yeah. That's exactly it. Like someone who's baked for, that's funny that you mentioned that because I've been watching when I was in Colorado this past week, that's why also that the episode was delayed, by the way, people listening.
Sorry.
I was in Colorado. Sorry.
We love you.
Sorry, not sorry. I was visiting my sister and we were skiing and it was awesome. Anyway, what was I saying? The possibility of it even being there, I think I was saying, or if I wasn't, I meant to get to this point eventually. Like my... I was talking about the baking thing. In the British, we were watching the Great British Bake Off or the Great British Baking Show, whatever it's called. And if you've never seen the show, every week, it's one of those, you know, every skills challenge shows. Every week they eliminate someone like MasterChef, but with baking. If you haven't seen Great British Bake Off, you should because it's amazing. But they have a challenge where they have three challenges every episode and two of them they can prepare for, but one of them is they're getting a bare bones recipe of something that they've usually never made before. A lot of the times, many of them have never even heard of it before. And so sometimes the directions will say like mix all these ingredients together and it won't tell you how much of each ingredient to put in. Or it'll just say bake and it won't tell you how much to bake. And it's like, oh, well, from all of their other like experience, they can sort of be like, oh, well, this has all of these ingredients, which is has similar ingredients to this thing. So it might come out like that. I'll bake it for this much. Whereas like,
that's how I bake.
I wonder if that sort of problem solving where it's like that sort of trial and error, I guess, for the lack of a better word, is different from like my aunt was talking to my sister about, I don't know, something that was wrong with her phone or something that was wrong with something. And my sister just Googled it and then told my aunt the answer. My aunt was like, oh, you're so smart. And my sister was like, well, I just Googled it. And my aunt was like, yeah, I didn't even think to Google it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, that's so funny. I want, cause like, I would just always like if I can't figure something out within, you know, quote unquote reasonable amount of time, I'm like, all right, I'm just Googling this.
Yeah, it's the order of operations, dude. It's the order of operations.
Or there'll be some like depending on what it is, you know, I'll sometimes it, like if it's computer stuff, you Google it before so that I don't go like messing anything up even worse. Or whatever. But yeah.
So
sometimes I'm feeling spicy. I might ask Jeeves.
Jeeves.
Ask Jeeves. Yeah, speaking of.
Ask Jeeves.
I don't know if it's just something I happened to miss personally, but I think culturally it just probably missed my generation. I don't think anybody knew Ask Jeeves.
No, I only know it through Brent.
Google took over really quickly. I mean, it was like Ask Jeeves and like Netscape Navigator.
Wasn't there one that was like called like Doggo or something? Like
maybe there was like a few that they basically all functioned the same way Google does, but Google was clearly the best one.
I can't
kind of just took over.
I can't
really quickly.
Believe I forgot. In the true story, they travel to a different star called Dog Star.
Oh,
Dog's nice,
which is
like the band.
Oh, the one I'm thinking of is Dogs. It's called Dogpile. It was a search engine.
Brent, I was wondering if you, because the video that I was watching that was talking about this also was like, yeah, Keanu Reeves band.
Yeah, Dogstar.
Dogstar. And then when I was like, it was so funny because when I was reading that, I'm like, I wonder if Brent's going to mention this band when I mention Dogstar.
Yes. Indeed. Yeah, I sure did.
Speaking of that, we're going to have to do like a sci-fi part two or something, because we went off on the longest tangent I think we've ever been on. Like, that was like a 40-minute tangent.
No, that's good, because I didn't have anything else.
Yeah, no, I think we kind of opened it up to a more broader discussion of just sci-fi's influence on technology, and that led us down quite the rabbit hole.
That was a fun rabbit hole, though. I was like, I hope there's not more left.
No, that's basically all I got.
Oh, good.
I'm gonna be dead honest. I was supposed to have more specific examples, but as I said before we started recording, I fell asleep and my phone died and my alarm didn't go off.
Oh, jeez.
But it's all good.
That's all right.
We made it through.
Rest is important.
I mean, I don't have anything else unless you guys have any conversation topics that you're dying to get off your chest.
Speaking of sci-fi, I got to go play Horizon Zero Dawn because I got to get myself deeper into that story load.
I believe you mean Horizon Forbidden West.
No!
I was going to ask if you guys have been...
I forgot. Been
playing it.
Yeah.
I'm peeking.
I'm like a solid 100 hours in right now.
And he still hasn't finished the main quest.
Oh my god. Yeah. That's like me on Elden Ring. Well, I've finished the main quest.
Oh, talk to Ben. Ben is obsessed with Elden Ring.
Elden Ring is so good, dude. It's so...
Yeah, I might give it a shot. I might give it a shot. I've been debating it. I'm just worried. I know myself with video games, and like, while I can hang with the get good kind of game, I don't necessarily enjoy it. Like, I get so mad that it's like, is this even healthy at this point?
Yeah, I feel that way too.
Elden Ring is good though, because since it's open world, there are more options than just getting good.
Right.
Like, you can go off and do easier stuff and then come back stronger.
Right.
I would say it's definitely, it's a good, it's if you've been apprehensive towards the like difficulty of the Dark Souls series before,
right.
I would recommend Elden Ring. It's pretty good. It's pretty good. It's amazing. It's like my favorite game of all time.
But I played it for like 5 minutes. It was pretty fun.
I mean, it's a pretty good entry point into if you've never played them before at this point.
But I might give it a shot when I finish Horizon Forbidden West, which frankly at this point I've basically been at what seems to be the last main quest mission that I just keep not doing, to like try to find like mugs and shit in the world. I'm like, let me go find this like black box from a crashed airplane so I can listen.
Brent's in denial. He doesn't want to finish the game.
Aren't the coffee mugs called like ancient chalices? They're called something funny.
They're called vessels.
Vessels.
But that's actually technically from the first game though. Yeah. There's no vessels in this one, but there are other kind of like goofy collectibles and shit. And I'm like, literally just like going like, oh, there's a spot on the map I haven't been to yet. Let's go see what's going on over there. And then a fucking giant Apex Thunderjaw comes charging out of the mountains. I'm like, oh, fuck.
If that's what you love about, you know, open world games, I would highly recommend Elden Ring. There's tons of Elden Ring has no like, it's one of those no quest markers games.
Mm. Yeah.
And like you just have to keep track of. It's also there's like, also
where you been.
It's also
get the whiteboard out.
Yeah. It's also a no quest log entirely kind of game.
Oof.
So
that's dangerous for me. Bad memory. Daddy's got a bad memory.
Yeah, so like, and there are a lot of like just random NPCs that you'll talk to and that like you'll just like, I can't, like the first time I played through it, I talked to so many NPCs that I just never saw again, because so many like the hallmark of that game is like esoteric, weird, convoluted NPC quest lines, where it's like, talk to this person outside of this church, and then then they'll be in the deep canyon dark roots, but make sure you talk to them before you defeat this boss, or else they won't be there and you'll have failed their quest line. And it's like, oh, okay, great.
I've been watching some streams and stuff. It seems kind of out there, but in a fun way. Yeah, so.
It's also a gorgeous game. But anyway, thank you guys for listening to this.
Yeah,
This was a podcast, wasn't it?
We did it. We made a podcast.
I know, it's about time.
Our views are going up somehow, and it's great. It's our listens are pretty solid. We were looking at them today, and we appreciate you guys.
I was like, how do we have this many downloads when we've only released one episode this month?
It makes no sense.
People love their BB&J, dude. People need their BB&J sandwiches at least twice a month, you know?
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Yeah, we really do appreciate you guys. We appreciate our patrons, which you can go on to Brain Boggled Podcast on Patreon and find us there. We got some perks. We also got some social media you can follow us on. We basically tell you when the episodes come out at this point.
Yeah, we've been slacking on the memes. A lot of fronts.
me and Brett were talking today. We're like, man, if we just put like some amount of effort in, we could probably get a lot more listeners. And we have a lot of listeners.
Yeah,
but we're so freaking lazy. But you know what? Life is hard right now, okay?
Yeah, dude,
life is hard.
I don't want to...
It's called self-care, right?
Yeah, it's called self-care.
I can't
take
be
care
bothered
of
to advertise my podcast, dude.
Yeah. Wait, you think I've got to put Jack's face on, like, an alien or some shit? On a boat on the moon?
No.
In this economy?
Oh, yeah.
I got things to do, man.
I can't even fathom a time where I was able to sit down and make cartoons of us talking for hours on end.
Oh, that's so
because that used to be a thing.
It's been wild.
Yeah, but we love
plug
you guys.
Some of our shit, other shit.
We have
a store. The email if you want.
Oh,
yeah, we have a store on the website, brainbogglepodcast.com. We have an email, brainbogglepodcast@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. Send us your topic ideas, your thoughts, your feelings. Maybe this is ghost. Tell us your ghost stories.
Yes.
I don't know.
Fun fact for those who don't know, the Hulk can see ghosts. Look it up. It's true.
Mm. I think we're talking about that pre-pod.
Yeah,
I don't know if that made it to the recording, but
I don't think it made it.
I'm not sure. But you'll know when you're listening to this, if it did or not, because I'm not sure right now. And 5-star reviews, if you can.
Yes, leave us a review. Please leave us a review. It's
5 stars, please.
It makes a big difference.
Hell yeah. All right.
I can't tell if Jack's frozen or if he's just in shock.
No, sorry. I was reading about the Hulk seeing dead people.
Yeah, dude, it's true. It's true. But
what?
Jack's just in awe right now. Let's sign off.
No. It's because I'm reading it and it says it's just like I can't tell if this article is being sarcastic in the way that they say because it's just a thing that he can do, or if it legitimately is like just unrelated to all of his other Hulk stuff.
I don't know. I found an article that showed examples. So,
I just mean like if he didn't get gamma radiation, could he be ghost seeing man? But anyway, that's next week's topic. Could the Hulk have been ghost seeing man? And
could Tyler Henry's Medium show on Netflix could actually be hosted by Bruce Banner?
Oh, I want to watch that tonight.
How are you going to get an hour out of that? But just you wait.
All right, guys, we love you.
Okay, bye.
And we'll see you next time.